Scott Morrison will travel to Washington in September, where he'll be feted by Donald Trump at a rarely given state dinner at the White House. The US president is expected to use the official visit to seek Australian support for a more aggressive pushback against China in the Indo-Pacific. This comes as Beijing's treatment of Muslim Uyghurs emerges as the latest flashpoint in the often troubled China-Australia relationship. Our foreign minister is Maurice Payne, and she joins us now. Minister, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, friend.
Well, I guess it doesn't get any better than a state dinner at the White House. Donald Trump has only hosted one other world leader at a state dinner. That was the French President Emmanuel Macron early on. What will Donald Trump want from Scott Morrison and Australia in return?
Well, I think it's a very important visit, Fran. Obviously, the opportunity for the state dinner is, as you refer to, but also key meetings in Washington with senior members of the administration, the Congress, and the Senate. We obviously have regular visits between Australia and the United States at the highest levels, but it is an honour to have a state dinner accorded, a visit to Arlington to lay a wreath in remembrance of the fallen at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and so on. So, obviously very important engagements and continuing from the very productive meetings at the G20.
On the weekend, the Prime Minister was singing Donald Trump's praises. He described the President as, quote, a strong leader who says what he's going to do and then goes and does it. I can always rely on President Trump to follow through on what he says. Now, Australia has always tried to walk a fine line between China, our biggest trading partner, and the US, our strongest security partner. Is there a danger that the Chinese government will view this state dinner, this official visit, as Australia now choosing a side and choosing Washington, not Beijing?
Well, I think any administration around the world, no matter who it is, recognises that we have key relationships and alliances, and the US most certainly one of our most significant. But that does not detract from our ability to have important working relationships with others, including China. So I think it would be seen as a perfectly reasonable and sensible engagement between Australia and the United States.
Is the relationship with China militarily or strategically getting more complicated? Just last week, the Chinese Defence Minister Wei Feng reportedly said China wants to use its Belt and Road Initiative to deepen military exchanges with Pacific Island countries, which would be the first acknowledgement that the BRI has a military purpose. China, we know, wants to build ports and airports in Vanuatu and Manus Island and other places, clearly not in Australia's strategic interests. Will that mean our so-called step up in the Pacific will have to be even more assertive to try and counter Chinese influence?
Our engagement in the Pacific is very comprehensive and growing every day, really, in terms of our pursuit of the Pacific step up. I've been in Fiji in the last month since we were sworn in. The Prime Minister, of course, in Solomon Islands. I was also in New Zealand at the end of last week. And this week I'm heading to the Cook Islands and very much looking forward to that for a first opportunity to visit and meet with Prime Minister Puna there. What we are focused on is the inclusivity, the prosperity, the security of the Pacific. We're focused on supporting the initiatives identified in the Boyd Declaration at last year's Pacific Island Forum. And indeed, I will also be at the Forum Foreign Ministers meeting in Fiji next week. Australia is very, very committed to ensuring that our neighbours, our family in the Pacific, are supported in the most constructive way that we can. And we encourage others to support them constructively as well. And anything that contributes to security, to stability, to prosperity is an important part of that.
Well, one thing that does contribute, it would seem, is climate change and more action on climate change. We now see reported in the Fin Review today comments from the Chief of the Defence Force, Angus Campbell, that he made last month, apparently, warning that China could try to occupy Pacific islands that might have to be abandoned due to rising sea waters. This confirms once and for all, doesn't it, that climate change is a national security issue and Australia has to do more to help the region combat rising sea levels.
Well, we certainly have not. I was not at the event that's referred to. I've seen the report today, but as I've already mentioned, the Boyd Declaration, which was adopted at last year's Pacific Island Forum, it identifies climate change clearly as a key security issue. We are part of the the pursuit of the Boy Declaration as a member of the Pacific Island Forum, and we are very focused on our engagement on climate in the region.
I think it's fair to say our region. I think it's fair to say our region is not satisfied with the level of focus Australia has on climate change, and to sort of emphasise the issue, the strategic issue it poses for us, we now also have internal briefing notes from the ADF, obtained by the ABC today, which reveal a prediction that the military may have to increase its patrols in our northern waters to deal with an influx of climate refugees from Pacific Island countries. Is our government wargaming a scenario like this?
Well, I haven't seen those briefing notes, Fran, as you would expect if they're defence briefing notes. But the focus that we have through our Australian Infrastructure Financing Facility of the Pacific, which will stream climate adaptation and resilience through its investments in energy, in transport, in communications and in water, reflects that priority that we are placing on these issues. I was in a meeting in Canberra last week or the week before with the Fijian Attorney General and Minister for the Economy, who was very, very focused with us on looking at AIFFP projects for that infrastructure financing and focused on what they can contribute in terms of climate resilience. So in a practical sense, and in a very real sense, that is absolutely our focus. We made an announcement around marine litter during the election campaign, another very important initiative and one which has been raised with me at meetings recently as well.
It's 16 to 8. Our guest is Foreign Minister Maurice Payne. Another strain in the China relationship emerging quite dramatically now is the incarceration of more than 1 million Muslim Uyghurs in detention camps in the western region of Xinjiang. Australia co-signed a letter to the UN Human Rights Council last week urging Beijing to end its mass arbitrary detentions and related violations. Beijing has retaliated, accusing countries like Australia of, quote, smearing China in total disregard for the truth and grossly interfering in China's internal affairs. Does the Australian government stand by its criticism of the treatment of the Uyghurs?
Fran, we've said very consistently that we are deeply concerned about the human rights situation in Xinjiang, including the use of detention facilities. And those concerns have been raised with China regularly, including directly by me in my visit last year. A letter was signed to the President of the Human Rights Council and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights a week or so ago, and we were one of 22 signatories to that letter. And I think what that reflects is an increased international focus on the developments in Xinjiang. We are concerned about the forced detention, as we are advised, of Uyghurs and other Muslim groups, and we are very concerned about the underlying tensions that exist there.
What are we doing about it? Tonight's Four Corners investigates these arbitrary detentions. As I said, at least 10 Australian permanent residents are stuck in Xinjiang under this, including a two-year-old boy whose father's from Sydney. This boy is an Australian citizen. Have you raised his case with your Chinese counterpart?
Well, we raise cases with Chinese officials as they are brought to our attention. We provide consular assistance to a number of Uyghurs who are Australian citizens, and we've sought information from Chinese authorities at the request of Chinese Australians, Uyghur Australians, about the whereabouts of friends and family in Xinjiang. As I've said, the Human Rights Commission or Human Rights Council is an appropriate place also to raise those concerns, and that's one of the reasons that we joined the correspondence in recent weeks.
How muscular is our response, though? As I say, this two-year-old is an Australian citizen. Many of these others held are permanent residents. They have family here in Australia. Reportedly, they've had their passports confiscated. How vigorously are you raising this with your Chinese counterpart? And has Australia had, for instance, consular access to these people?
Well, we do request consular access when we are notified of such a detention.
And have we had it?
And it is important, well, can I just say, it's very important to note that there are complex family arrangements around family members who are in Xinjiang, and I don't want to go into the personal details because that's not always appropriate for privacy reasons. But if they're not Australian citizens, we don't have an entitlement to consular access. China doesn't provide consular access to dual nationals unless they've actually entered China on their Australian passports. So that does add to the complexity, but we continue to raise these issues and to seek information and access.
What about more general access justifying find out what's going on. I mean, this campaign in Xinjiang appears to be the largest internment of people on the basis of religion since the Holocaust. What more can Australia and the world do to help these people? Because China claims, in response to that letter that you're a signatory to, officials from countries behind the letter declined an invitation to visit. Is that true?
I don't understand that to be the case. We have sought diplomatic visits in the past, and indeed we have sought diplomatic visits for our deputy ambassador and previously for ambassadors. And those requests, as far as I'm aware, have not been granted. And we will continue to do so and continue to press our concerns.
And more broadly, what more can the world be doing?
Well, I think engagement through bodies such as the Human Rights Council is an appropriate place and way in which to raise human rights concerns. I think actions such as those which were taken recently, including the letter that was sent that you've referred to, are also appropriate. And then, of course, we take up other matters directly with Chinese counterparts. That is what I understand other countries who are also concerned to be doing.
So just to check on the status of this two-year-old boy, Australian citizen, and his mother, what is the latest? Have we had consular access to him?
Not as far as I'm aware. As I have said, we have sought access to a number of cases. I'm not going to comment on individual cases because there are privacy concerns which relate to those. We've sought access on a number of cases and also to visit, and that has not been granted.
Maurice Payne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran.
Maurice Payne is Australia's Foreign Minister. You're listening to RN Breakfast.